rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, Live 365's AM, American FM, and WhiteRoseSociety.org, which runs our program continuously. We've got our own station on there, essentially, 24 hours a day. Hear this program over and over. So, and podcasting as well from WhiteRoseSociety.org. Also on cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. It is the last day of the week here, and traditionally, as always, on we have Congressman Bernie Sanders on, the independent from Vermont, Bernie.org, the new website, and house.bernie.gov, or no, bernie.house.gov, right, the other website. If you'd like to check out what Bernie's up to on the internet, Bernie, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, reelected 7 times, and our telephone number, if you have a question, comment, call, you know, concern about anything we're talking about, anything, any topic you'd like to bring up, our number, toll-free across the United States, 866-889-8894, 866-889-8894. From outside the United States, 503-248-0620. And if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom. This is actually the first radio show that we've done face-to-face together.
Yeah, well, other than the one that we did on C-SPAN.
That's right.
That was sort of side-by-side. Yeah, but it's great to have you here. Bernie is here we're at the Take Back America conference put on by the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. And, Bernie, what do you see as the biggest issue here, progressives, this is a progressive conference, that progressives, and that really citizens in general should be addressing?
Well, I think the answer is pretty obvious, and I'd like to hear what the listeners have to say, but I'll tell you something. What I see is the most important issue facing this country is what's happening to ordinary people. And what's happening to ordinary middle-class people is that they're seeing their standard of living going down. In many ways, the middle class is collapsing. We're seeing poverty increasing. We are the nation in the industrialized world which has by far the highest rate of childhood poverty. We're seeing the gap between the rich and the poor growing wider to levels that we have not seen in this country since the 1920s. We're seeing greed becoming the dominant ideology of our time. We're seeing a healthcare system virtually collapsing. We're seeing pensions being taken away from workers despite the promises made by their corporations. You're seeing working mothers not being able to send their kids to childcare, middle-class families not being able to afford college for their kids. And, Tom, I'll tell you what really should be of concern to every listener. For the first time in the modern history of America, everything being equal, our kids are going to have a lower standard of living than we are, your kids, my kids.
That's not the American dream, Bernie.
That's not the American dream. Not for my parents my father came to this country with nothing. And as did millions of other families.
As did my grandfather.
And to see, despite the increase in technology, right, all over this place, every worker in America is producing substantially more than somebody at that job did 20 or 30 years ago. Worker productivity is zooming up. Why is the middle class collapsing? Why is the gap between the rich and the poor growing wider? Now, the truth is, that is the major issue to my mind. And yet, you're not going to see that terribly often on the front pages of newspapers. Occasionally you will, but by and large you won't. And then the result of that is that many people begin to think that the economic stress that their family is living under, that they're the only person who's going through that.
Yeah.
They're saying, gee, my wife is working, I'm working, we don't have any money, what's going on? Well, guess what, friends? Today, two workers in a family have less disposable income than a one-worker family did 30 years ago. And you know what? It ain't your fault. Wages are not keeping up with inflation. What you're paying for your housing is substantially more than it used to be. College education is ripping apart people's savings. Healthcare, who can afford healthcare? So those are the issues I think we have got to focus on as a country, find the causes of those problems, and ultimately be prepared to take on Mr. Bush and his friends who so clearly represent the big money interests who dominate our society.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I saw in the Wall Street Journal, either yesterday or the day before, there was an article about how productivity has increased again worker productivity in America is now hitting all-time levels, that it's outstripping virtually every other country in the world, and yet there was no parallel mention in this article about the fact that worker compensation has been relatively flat, and in fact has been steadily declining basically ever since Ronald Reagan came in and declared war on working Americans.
That's exactly right. Why
isn't this being covered?
Well, because, and here's the point, I mean, there are many people who say, okay, you know, we have politicians who debate issues, and then we have the media who's going to operate as a referee, fair and impartial. Well, that ain't the case. The truth of the matter is, much of the media, almost all of the corporate media, is owned by exactly the same people who have declared war on American workers 30 years ago. We're having a company, just there's one example of many, General Electric, one of the large corporations in America. The chairman of General Electric, the CEO of General Electric, Jeff Immelt, said a few years ago, when I look to the future of General Electric, I see China, China, and China. Well, guess what? NBC is owned by General Electric. Do you think they're going to be reporting about our disastrous trade policies? I don't think so.
I kind of doubt it. Yeah.
Or the whole issue of distribution of income. You know, we hear a lot about morality. Well, let's talk about morality in the sense that we have seen in the last year an increase in billionaires. At the same time, as 20% of the children in this country live in poverty.
We're seeing an increase in infant mortality. We're seeing children born with over 100, on average, over 100 different cancer-causing chemicals in their bloodstream, with high lead and arsenic levels. This administration is raising these levels of poisons in our air. They are eliminating programs to help women with prenatal care and postnatal care. They are killing babies. And these are the ones who are running around saying that they want to defend babies, right? I mean, you got Tom DeLay on the—I don't know if he was on the floor of the House. He was on TV the other day saying, "We want to stop stem cell research because it's dismembering little babies." But you know, how can Democrats turn this around and characterize the Republicans as the party of death, which in fact they are, in my opinion. I'm
well,
just
sure
speaking
that.
For myself.
Yeah. Well, the issue here is, I mean, it's not just babies. In America, our people pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. It is no secret that all over this country you have lower-income seniors who go to the doctor. The doctor writes out the prescription, and you know what? They don't fill. These people don't have the money to get that prescription filled. So what happens? They suffer and they die. There's no question about that. The evidence is overwhelming that low-income people get far inferior health care than do upper-income people. If you don't have any health insurance and you get sick, what do? You're going to wait and wait and hope it gets better. And yet if you're coming down with something serious, by the time you walk into the doctor's office, it may be too late. Those are stories being told all over America. When you don't have health insurance and you can't afford prescription drugs, you suffer, and in some cases, you die. No great secret about that.
Yeah, and that's what the Republicans are up to. And we should say not just Republicans. That's what, I mean, there are some Democrats who are voting with them as well.
Well, what we have got to do, I think, you know, when we talk about politics, what we have got to appreciate is there are a million issues out there. There are so many issues, and everybody is concerned about this, that, and the other thing. But I think we've got to focus on the major issues facing the vast majority of the people, and that is people working two or three jobs because one job is not going to do it anymore. People staying at jobs because they have health insurance despite the fact they'd rather move on. Kids who are very intelligent, who could do well in college, can't afford to go to college because they don't want to come out of school deeply in debt. Tiny babies who are going to child care centers or staying in people's homes which are not enriching them. In many cases, they're spending their days watching TV in a country which talks about the importance of our children. Stay focused on those issues. Ask ourselves why. Is it appropriate to give tax breaks to billionaires and then you cut back on the needs of those people who are in Medicaid, cut back on the needs of our veterans so that when they come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, they're not going to have the health care that they need?
Why do they do this? What possible rationale would the Tom DeLays of the world have for behaving this way?
Well, first of all, they're funded by these people. So Tom
is a self-interest.
In all due respect to Tom DeLay, he is an operative. He works for other people. And I think, as I've said many times, you can really understand why certain pieces of legislation get to the floor of the House. Why does a bill which repeals the inheritance tax, which will give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks only to the wealthiest 2%. How does that bill get to the floor of the House? But when some of us want to raise the minimum wage, no way we're going to get that bill to the floor of the House. What's the answer? The answer is billionaires pay for that legislation. They make campaign contributions. And you see that on the bankruptcy bill. You see that in the so-called Bush Energy Bill, which is massive corporate welfare for the coal companies and the oil companies, while at the same time, of course, the price of oil and gasoline at the pump continues to be extraordinarily high. And that's what you got. You have small numbers of extraordinarily wealthy people controlling the political process, controlling the economic process, controlling the media. And unless we focus and come together on those issues that bring us together, that we all share, rather than get separated on the abortion issue or, you know, gay rights issue, stay focused. Fight for your kids. Fight for your parents. Fight to make us a country in which every man, woman, and child has a decent standard of living. This is not utopian visionaries speaking. This is something that we can do. And I think the problem is that the Republicans have done a very good job splitting the American people. So people who have no health care, they're going to lose Medicaid, but man, they cast the vote against gay rights. Well, that's great. That's great. And they cast the vote so that their parents will not have the kind of Medicare coverage that they need, you know, and on it goes. So I think, to my mind, we have to appreciate people, look at different things differently. Let's stay focused on the major issues.
Whether we call ourselves progressives or liberals or Democrats or conservatives or Republicans,
exactly,
no matter what, these are the issues of our time.
Absolutely. If you think there are not millions of Republicans who would say, you know, share the same views that you and I are sharing, we cannot compartmentalize people, label people. That's not good. That's not good. And understand that every human being, you have differences with your wife, I have differences with my wife. Of course the American people are going to have political differences. But in terms of, should we provide health care to all people? Should you give tax breaks to the rich and not take care of our veterans? 90%+ of the people do not think that that's appropriate.
And how can we encourage our media to cover this? We have about a minute here before we go to a break. There, I am not seeing labor issues. There's a Teamster strike going on right now in Los Angeles. I have not seen any media coverage of it. None. They're saying don't buy Coke products in solidarity with them. How can people even know about that?
That's a huge, and that's, well, we'll have to save that discussion because that's a huge issue. But
yeah,
clearly we are not going to turn America around unless people hear about what's going on rather than getting their information filtered through the corporate media. No question about that.
And so we need to be getting the word out more often.
Well, and programs like yours are doing an extraordinarily good job in that. We need a lot more of them. That's what we've got to do.
Amen. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program, it's the Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I'm just an old truth teller. I'm your candidate.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here sitting with my favorite old truth teller, Bernie Sanders. Old? Well, my favorite truth teller. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program today. And John in Dallas, Texas, on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Number one is that I really enjoy having these Friday mornings with Bernie Sanders.
I do, too.
Yes, I can see that. I do have one question, is that the way that I see it, at least, the way that things are going on in the House is that the House has a slight Republican majority, but more so now than I have seen in the last 10, 15 years, it seems that the majority party, the Republicans, are very much in lockstep. Because they're in lockstep, and even though they have a small majority, they don't even have to listen to anything that comes up from the minority. When I watch it on C-SPAN and that, I see all these bills coming up that the Republicans got together, they put the bill together, they announce it on the floor, and the Democrats want to put amendments on it. They're not allowed to do that or anything else. And as I see it, the Democrats might just as well not be there. Does that mean that the only way that we're going to get our voice heard, and we're probably 49%, 51% by the last election, so, you know, we're at least very close to half the country, is the only way that we're going to get through is that we get back to a Democratic majority, or is there going to be some crack that we can work through? I'd like to hear from Bernie on that.
John, good question, John.
John, what John said is exactly right. Look, the truth of the matter is every party that has the majority uses its power to push its agenda. This is nothing. It's always gone on. It goes on in every country in the world. But what the Republicans are doing now is unprecedented, certainly in the last many, many years in the United States, if forever. I mean, I can give you many, many examples. But John is absolutely right in saying that people like DeLay enforce a lockstep reaction. If people break ranks, like Joel Heffley did, a conservative Republican, but he thought that the committee that dealt with ethics should actually deal with it in a nonpartisan way. Well, Heffley was taken off that
committee.
You got
rid of him quick.
Chris Smith of New Jersey, a conservative, very conservative Republican, was chairman of the Veterans Committee. And Chris had the strange idea that as chairman of the Veterans Committee, he should be an advocate for veterans rather than cutting their programs. Gone off of the Veterans Committee.
Nick Smith in Michigan?
Nick Smith, that's right. And on it goes. One of the historic roles, constitutional roles, of the United States Congress, especially the House, is to act in an oversight capacity for whatever administration is in power. I sit on the Government Reform Committee, which has the special assignment of doing that. What I can tell you is there are no investigations. There are no hearings looking at what the Bush administration does. When Clinton was president, there were hearings every single day. Just look at Bush's record. Look at all of the questions that the American people have, from the war in Iraq to close to secrecy that takes place to taking over the public broadcasting, on and on it goes. No hearings at all. So John is right. There is a very centralized operation in the House. And one of the very sad aspects of what's going on in America is that while many Republicans, moderate Republicans, conservative Republicans, know that this stuff is wrong, know that their party has gone very far to the right, with the exception of Jim Jeffords of Vermont, my colleague from the state of Vermont, who had the guts to say, hey, this is not the party that I grew up in. This is now an extreme right-wing party. With the exception of Jeffords, not one Republican in Congress has broken ranks and say, sorry, I can't tolerate that.
Do you think that more may?
I talk to these guys all the time, and they tell you privately, you know.
Are they scared?
You know, it's a combination of things. If you want to be a committee chairman, which everybody does, that's where you have a little bit of ability to get things done, and you dissent from Tom DeLay, you ain't going to be a committee chairman.
Yeah, so it's about careers, it's about not
campaign,
being ostracized.
Fundraising and so forth.
Oh,
and
yeah,
so on.
All that stuff, it's politics. 29 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our number, 1-866-889-8894, toll-free nationwide. We'll be back right after this. Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your voice of sanity in the radio wilderness.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, along with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, our regular segment every week at this time. Congressman Sanders here with us live at the Take Back America Conference, where he's going to be speaking, by the way, at the top of the hour. So the last segment of the hour, the last few minutes of the program, he will not be with us. So this will be our last segment with Bernie. Bernie, we have a caller in Arcata, California on the line. Caller, welcome.
Is this me you're talking to?
That's you. I'm showing you as anonymous on my screen.
Yes.
I'm not sure why. You want to tell us why?
Yes, the reason is because I'm quite poor and disabled as well, and I receive the state Medi-Cal for my drug benefits and my health care. And I just received a notice in the mail yesterday that the Medi-Cal payments will no longer be made by the state. They're going to be covered under the prescription part of the Medicare bill. And instead of being, as it is now, my drug costs are zero. But there will now be a small copayment for each prescription.
And the result of that in your life will be?
Huge. I live on $400 a month.
Wow, that's a tough one. So your comment or question for Congressman Sanders?
Well, can anything be done about this? Or
yeah. What you're talking about is a huge issue that is going to impact people all over this country. And that is that this disastrous Medicare prescription drug bill, which was essentially written by the pharmaceutical industry, that was passed at 6 o'clock in the morning after Tom DeLay kept the voting rolls in the House open for three additional hours, is going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of people, and in addition is going to cost taxpayers huge sums of money. Many of us are trying hard to create a situation where we can lower the cost of prescription drugs in America, which means that the government can have a very strong prescription drug benefit for everybody, not the very weak benefits that currently exist. So to answer your question, yes, some of us are working very hard on that issue.
Okay. Thank you for that call. Did you have a follow-up, a comment you wanted to make?
Well, I was just curious. So you think that maybe I could get back to the way I was?
Well, hopefully you can. What I can tell you is we have a majority of members in the House and the Senate that are prepared to pass legislation that would substantially lower the cost of prescription drugs. If we can do that, then the prescription drug program that currently exists will be much, much improved. And hopefully it would mean that lower-income people would not have to pay what you are now being asked to pay.
And our Tom DeLay and George Bush fighting against that?
Absolutely, along with the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
In fact, this is the bill, you'll recall, Tom, where they specifically put language in which says that the government cannot negotiate prices with the drug companies. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. Kodak in North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina on the line. Hey, Kodak.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's very difficult for the American people, a lot of Democrats or any liberal-leaning organization to identify what is the number one thing facing Americans today, because it's a very complex issue with a array of problems. So the Democrats really need to first admit that they have gotten their butts kicked by Karl Rove and the Republican machine. And my example of this has to do with the very conference you all are at. I've noticed many groups that come up there and speak. They all have their own plans, but no one has said that they have gotten with this group in order to try to focus or centralize the issue, and then each group speak about it from their perspective.
Right. So is there a comment or a question for Congressman Sanders, Kodak?
Yes, yes. My question is, how do you get these groups in order to at least identify the problem that is the number one issue facing America, and then how do we get those groups in order to work together? Because it's like the representatives from the Democratic Party yesterday, they couldn't even agree with the number one problem, and one of them said that she didn't feel that the 2004 election problems were that severe, and she was a strategist for the party.
I know. Okay. Thanks a lot, Kodak. Bernie?
Well, Kodak raises a good question. What has to happen, essentially, is not only different groups have got to talk to each other, is groups have got to talk to ordinary Americans. On all of the issues that we have been talking about, healthcare, education, veterans' needs, not giving tax breaks to billionaires, the vast majority of the people are on our side. I think what we need to do is forge a progressive agenda that says that government works for everybody, not the wealthy and the powerful, that we're not going to get deflected by all of these wedge issues. And then we take that agenda, we develop that agenda with the help of the American people, we take it out and we organize around that agenda. I think that's the way we should be doing politics.
Yeah. And get involved politically at the grassroots. Get involved in your political system. Walter in Crescent City, California on the line. Hey, Walter, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Paul, you got to run that pot all the way up to the top. We can hardly hear Walter.
I think that the biggest problem that we face now, or one of the biggest problems we face, is the depleted uranium weapons. We have scattered southern Iraq with radiation that is killing and destroying children, and we've got our own GIs coming home. 3 out of 10 are coming home with radioactive activity in their bodies. What the hell are we doing about it? Nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, not nobody, Walter. Some of us, along with relatively few people in the Congress, have been long involved in this whole issue of Gulf War illness. I think generally it is understood that one part of it, not the whole part, but one part of it has to do with in fact, the reality that many of our soldiers over there were exposed to depleted uranium. We know that. In my view, depleted uranium should not be used. You're right. And not only that it hurts our soldiers, but it also hurts people in the civilian area in those countries as well.
But Bernie, it's saving a fortune to the nuclear power industry and the weapons industry because they can get rid of their nuclear waste this way.
That's quite incredible, yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're quite right. I mean, it is an outrage. It is an outrage. And there are studies, and sometimes they're conflicting, which do point out that they have caused a lot of civilian damage for children and others in Iraq as well. So this is an issue that has got to be addressed.
Is Congress, are there hearings going to be held in Congress on this or anything like
not
this?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge. That's a shame. 1-866-889-8894. A telephone number, Bob in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. WTKG. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom and Bernie.
Hi.
I turned the radio on and somebody had turned the darn thing to to Rush Limbaugh's station, and I listened to it for a few minutes. And I can't believe the way that that man is sitting there and taking Mark Felt and Woodard and Bernstein and just doing a number on them. Are the people on the far right so morally corrupt they can't realize that Richard Nixon was a bad apple, a bad man, a bad president? Do your colleagues say the same thing as what Limbaugh and the far right do?
Good question, Bob.
Well, some of them do and some of them don't. I think as we talked about earlier, let me tell you something. Not every Republican is a right-wing extremist. Not every Republican looks up and respects Tom DeLay. But as we talked about earlier, in the House at least, you have an enormous amount of discipline. If people get out of step, they are punished. They can lose their campaign funding. They can lose their committee chairmanships. And he runs a very, very tight and disciplined ship. But there are, I think one of the sad aspects of current American politics is that many Republicans know that what their party is doing is wrong, it is extremist, and yet they don't have the guts to stand up and fight back.
Do you think, Bernie, or I don't know, maybe this is something, I'll just throw out my opinion on it. My take on it is that the reason Limbaugh and the whole right wing is spending so much time right now attacking Mark Felt is because they're scared to death that a similar scandal could unravel George Bush, and they're trying to do a preemptive launch. They're trying to say basically to the media, if you try to expose a scandal in the Bush administration the way that Woodward and Bernstein did in the Nixon administration, the rules have changed now, and we're going to take you apart the way we took Joe Wilson apart.
I think that's a reasonable hypothesis.
Yeah, it's a scary hypothesis, too. Philip in St. Louis on the line. Hey, Philip.
Yeah, I had a question of yours. Caller earlier was talking about depleted uranium, from our machine guns and things like that. What's the difference between using a dirty bomb to scatter something like depleted uranium, you know, and irradiate a bunch of people, and using machine guns to do the same thing? And what's to stop the insurgents over there from sweeping up these bullets off the street and using it in a bomb as well?
Interesting question.
It is an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that, Philip. What we do know is that the use of depleted uranium is just another step forward to a very dangerous kind of warfare, which, among other things, not only impacts soldiers, but civilians as well. And I think we've got to take a hard look at that and try to get that out of what the military is doing.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. George in Waterford, Michigan on the line. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Tom? First
Great.
Time I've called.
Cool. Glad to have you.
First time
callers always go to the front of the line.
My comment is on the variety of issues that the progressive movement is trying to address, and I believe at this point, I think the singular issue that the entire progressive and Democratic Party should be focusing on is the Downing Street memo and the lie that President Bush has basically lied to the Congress and American people to take us into war. There should be no other issue on the burner other than that. We should be marching on Washington for impeachment.
Well, I don't agree with. Obviously, what the Downing Street memo is about is that the folks in the United Kingdom acknowledged, though something was leaked, that many, many months before the war, that Bush had made a decision to go to war, that he was going to use the information and the intelligence that came in to buttress his arguments rather than looking at them objectively. And that's, a smoking gun in many respects. But to say that that should be the only issue, no, I don't think that that is the only issue. I think when you're seeing millions and millions of people working longer hours for low wages, don't have any health care, can't afford to send their kids to college or to preschool, those are also very important issues.
Yeah, so all of these things collectively are reasons to throw the bums out of office.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
In anger.
And many other issues.
Yeah, there we go. Keith in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Keith, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Yes, and continuing the comment that you just made about throwing the bums out of office, the guys, I just ended a short career with one of the top retailers in the country that contributes 30% of the company's income back to the communities in religious donations, etc. But the owners feel good about the fact that the people that work for them qualify for public assistance.
Yeah, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, Keith makes a very interesting point, and the good news is that I think there is more and more attention being paid to it. We know that there have been a number of studies done about Walmart, for example. I don't know if Walmart is the company that Keith is talking about. But Walmart, whose five primary owners are worth about $100 billion combined, $100 billion, one family, they pay their workers so low, and the health programs they provide to their workers are so minimal that lots and lots of Walmart employees have to go on Medicaid to get health insurance for their kids. And what we find, therefore, is that taxpayers of the United States are subsidizing one of the wealthiest families in this country because they're not providing the wages and benefits that their workers need. That is clearly an outrage.
Yeah. Rochelle in Scottsdale, Arizona on the line. Hey, Rochelle.
Hi, good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, whichever it is. Bernie, I have a couple of thoughts here. You know, everybody talks about we need to change all kinds of things in this country, and I think we all know we need to change them. But the question is how? There doesn't seem to be an effective way of doing it. Number one, we know that voting has to be fixed or all of this is for naught. The second thing I believe, and I'm going to ask what you think, is that we need to come up with a better message. It seems that you all put bills in front of Congress and they get stomped on and no one ever hears about them again. And then everyone says the Democrats have no voice, they have no vision, they have no anything. Well, why? Because they have no idea what it is the Democrats want to do. And I don't mean just Democrats, you too, but what everyone who's not a Republican wants to do or change. And so it seems to me putting these bills in front of the Congress aren't working, and it seems to me that somehow, some way, we need to go out to the people. We need to put ads in newspapers saying that the Congress just passed a bill that really went against the common interest of the average person. We have to change the language to things like minimum wage and billionaire wage. You know, they use up and down, and they started with judges, and now it's in Bolton, and they keep on going. We need to get some messages out there. There is a difference between the average man and the billionaire, but most people don't know what it is. Most people believe a death tax helped them. They don't know it had nothing to do with them.
Yeah, good point, Rochelle, and we need to be talking about billionaire wages and living wages, fair wages.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Rochelle.
And Rochelle is absolutely right, and some of us work very hard on that. I could just tell Rochelle that I remember during the lead-up to the war in Iraq, which I and many other members of Congress were strongly opposed to giving the president the authority to go to war. We held press conference after press conference after press conference. None of it got on TV at all. So how you deal with the media, how you go around the media, how you develop language that is clear, that makes working people understand that voting for George Bush and Tom DeLay is not in their best interest, is exactly what we have got to do.
Yeah, that's step one. 1-866-889-8894. John in Allentown, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, this is like he was just talking about there with the Tom DeLay and you're voting against your best interest. You know, when you get into I'm not sure the breakdown of how many red Republicans you got in blue states and stuff.
John,
like that.
John, we have less than a minute left, and Bernie's got to go give a speech. I got to ask you to make it really quick.
Okay, well then just start hammering home a message that you're not voting for this person; you're voting for Tom DeLay.
That's exactly right.
Okay,
and
Bernie.
John makes a very good point. What the most important point that any most important vote that any member of Congress casts is his first vote. And that is whether they're going to elect people like Tom DeLay to run the United States Congress. So don't allow candidates to say, well, I disagree with DeLay. I have differences. They're going to vote for Tom DeLay.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks for being with us. Bernie, good luck on your speech. 50 minutes after the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Congressman Sanders has gone off to give a speech. At the top of the next hour, we're going to have Holly Sklar with us. But first, we have a whole stack of phone callers here. Let's get these out of the way. Tom in Lansing, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Not much. Thanks for taking my call. I like the show. I got a question. I know it's a little off topic, but I wanted to know. I sell the industry, and I wanted to know what. And I know what's happening in the industry and everything leaving. It's very depressing. Why NAFTA was signed, and also what
it doesn't. I'll just give you the answer. It doesn't.
Okay.
And we'll be talking about that more in the next hour with Holly when we get to the economic issues.
What happened to the balanced budget amendment? Also.
Yeah, well, that's gone too. That's,
I know.
It used to be a Republican issue, Tom. It used to, it's gone. It's toast.
Okay.
Tom, thank.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Ed in San Juan Capistrano, California. Hey, Ed. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Good morning. The question is I think we need to revive the problem in the '60s. A Methodist minister, I believe, came out with a statement that God is dead. Do you remember that?
I'm sorry. Say it again.
That God is dead.
God is dead.
A Methodist minister in the '60s.
Right.
I think we need to start saying that democracy is dead.
I don't think it is.
You're not going to. I know you're not going to argue with that. But when we lost the election in 2000, it was stolen in 2004, and what's going on? And liberty and freedom has had the feeding tubes removed.
Yeah, okay. Well, Ed, I can't say I totally disagree with you. Holly Sklar is with us. I'm going to toss you on the air right now. We're trying to work out the time of this. We only have about a minute and a half left in this segment, or maybe 2 minutes. Holly, you have a new book out. What is the title?
Well, the latest book is Raise the Floor, Wages and Policies That Work for All of Us.
Right.
Right, and which talks about the absolute need to get wages up in this country and to make sure that everybody who works can make ends meet.
But the cons say, if we get wages up in this country, then we're going to have inflation and we can't afford to buy things at Walmart anymore. Give me a response.
We can't afford to buy things at Walmart because of the wage situation. But anyway,
yeah, well, that's the reality.
The response is that good wages are good business. And this is something people got to understand. Good wages are good business. You can only go so far in an economy in which you're counting on workers to keep choosing between health care and child care, choosing between eating their food or heating their house, and maxing out their work hours, maxing out their credit cards, maxing out their home equity loans in order to keep up consumer purchasing power.
Yeah, that's it. That's all we can do. Holly Sklar, you got to have a website?
www.raisethefloor.org.
Raisethefloor.org. Great. Thanks so much. Great work you're doing. You're one of the really fine writers working on really important issues here. Thanks. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast and border to border all across the United States of America, our fine country. Somebody the other day, not the other day, somebody earlier today was asking me, are you an optimist? Do you have hope for America? Do you really have hope for America? I have to say, yes, I have tremendous hope for America. I think that things go in cycles. You know, you just have to understand that things go in cycles. People do wake up. The truth does ultimately prevail. And you know, here we are. And to create a change, you have to be part of making that change happen. That's why I'm doing this program. I'm assuming that's why you're listening to this program. We all need to be activists. We all need to be participants. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartman.com, our website, if you'd like to drop by. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I keep being amazed by how things slip under the radar and the media doesn't pick it up or ask the questions such as...
Under the radar?
Yeah, under the radar. I mean, things are going on now. Like, they just changed the head of the SEC, who enforces...
Right, Donaldson.
Who enforces the laws to keep Wall Street honest. After the Enron debacle, they changed the laws, and then this guy was real tough on them, and they started complaining a lot. Well, now they've slipped in this new guy who's going to be easier on them, and we're going to go back to them being able to fudge rules, and they're not going to enforce things so carefully because, those poor Wall Street companies were complaining.
I know, and the USA Today, for example, had a front-page story about it, and the way they spun it was the new guy is more corporate-friendly. Say what? I don't think it's friendly to corporations to allow them to engage in crimes. I'm sorry. I just don't see that as corporate friendly. I see that as corporate hostile. That's like saying we have a new chief of police, but he's not going to enforce the laws against muggings and shoplifting. He's more consumer and citizen friendly. What?
He's criminal friendly. You know.
Well, you know, it's not even about the criminals. It's about what it does to everybody else.
Exactly.
If you don't enforce the rules for the small number of people who break them, it harms everybody else. All of business in America is harmed when people like Enron do what they did. And
right.
and the Republicans who are being influenced so heavily by the Enron types of companies, the companies that think that it's all about buying influence and making things happen that way, those companies are creating an environment that is harmful to the rest of business in America. Big business, medium business, small business, all of it. And for USA Today to run a front page story saying that Chris Cox is business friendly and that's the paradigm, that's the model, that's the frame that they're going to throw out there for this guy, I think it's wrong. It's just wrong.
Yeah, and they made it harder for stockholders to sue. That's just another part of that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and... Well, yeah,
but
you
it's
got
under
it.
The radar, you know, when things were rough and we heard about Enron, everyone was mad. It was a big deal. Now it's quieted down. Now they're slipping in.
Right, so they get rid of Donaldson, who's been enforcing the law, who, by the way, is 73 or 74-year-old Republican, old-time friend of the Bush family. They thought he would do their bidding. Instead, he decided to enforce the law. Oh, my goodness! He's enforcing the law. They say, we got to get this guy out of here. He's toast. Replace him with Chris Cox. Meet Chris. Thanks a lot for the call, Glenn, by the way. Meet Chris Cox, as the Center for American Progress, the man who helped produce the Enron scandal. You get this? The man who helped produce the Enron scandal. He's going to be the new head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Orange County Weekly reported that, quote, Cox, as part of conservative Republicans' so-called contract with America, spearheaded efforts to torpedo protections for corporate investors and shield companies like Enron and their accountants like Arthur Andersen from investor lawsuits. Point that Glenn was just making. Cox's sustained effort to provide protections to corporate bad actors was successful. The nation's economy was not. As a result of this, I have to tell you, as a result of this, you have tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people across the United States who have lost their pensions, millions of people across the United States who have lost health care, who are working two jobs, who are working, who have been downsized, shall we charitably say. And it all because of the efforts of former Congressman Chris Cox, the Republican who is now going to become the head of the SEC. Moreover, notes the Center for American Progress, Cox pushed his securities reform bill through Congress at the same time he was named a defendant in two lawsuits for securities fraud. You get this? This guy was a defendant in two lawsuits for securities fraud? And he's going to be the head of the SEC? Can anybody spell Fox and Henhouse? For the past 2.5 years, outgoing SEC Chairman William Donaldson has worked to repair the damage Cox helped produce, but Cox remains committed to his ideological agenda, and should he be confirmed, is ready to take the country back into the good old Enron era. Back to the days of greed is good. Back to the days of Mr. Gecko. Cox claimed on the floor of the House on March 7th, 1995, that securities law, these are the laws that protect investors from rogue companies, that protect employees from rogue companies. Chris Cox, on the floor of the House of Representatives, said that such laws are, and I quote, a legal torture chamber, more suitable to the pages of Charles Dickens' Bleak House than a nation dedicated to equal justice under law, end quote. Now, as I recall from having read Charles Dickens' concern was not whether Mr. Scrooge was being regulated to death. And a regulated death, another, you know, nice buzzword, right? Let's say whether Mr. Scrooge was being kept honest. That really wasn't what Dickens' England was all about. Mr. Scrooge, you know, Dickens' England, Dickens' concern was with the average working person. In fact, Charles Dickens' father, and this may have colored his worldview, Charles Dickens' father was thrown into prison because he was unable to pay his bills at one point in his life. He faced, you know, bankruptcy. He was wiped out. And this is the disaster of Charles Dickens. So here we have Chris Cox, who now we're going to have bringing us back to the Enron era. Cox's efforts to weaken protections for investors culminated in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. This is the piece of law that this guy pushed through. People say, oh, you know, the cons. They love to say, well, you know, that Enron stuff had happened on Clinton's watch, really, even though the bubble burst during Bush's watch. Well, it happened as a result of the efforts of Chris Cox. He passed a law called the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. He was the guy who pushed this to weaken the protections for investors. This law provided extensive legal protection to corporate executives, accountants, and lawyers who made misleading statements. The bill was enacted into law over President Clinton's veto. Now, isn't it amazing how the cons are rewriting history? They're saying, well, you know, this is all Clinton's fault. He let Enron excesses. No, I'm sorry. Clinton tried to veto the bill that Chris Cox put forward that allowed the Enron excesses. The veto was overruled by the Republicans. It was enacted into law over Clinton's veto after heavy lobbying from Arthur Andersen and the rest of the accounting industry. Arthur Andersen, the company that went down with Enron. Duke University law professor James Cox, no relation, called the law the ultimate in special interest legislation. Barbara Roper, the director of investor protection at the Consumer Federation of America, said Chris Cox's law, quote, not only made it possible but likely that something like Enron would occur, end quote. This is the guy we're putting in as head of the Securities and Exchange Commission? According to OC Weekly, independent legal analyses and securities lawyers agree that Cox's bill significantly raised the bar at several points in the litigation process, making it much harder for plaintiffs to bring lawsuits. Specifically, plaintiffs would have to prove that there was a strong inference that a defendant acted with a required state of mind for fraud. This is what the Supreme Court just ruled. You know, they went back and they looked at the law, Chris Cox's law, that said that a corporation has to have criminal intent. So when Arthur Andersen was shredding all those documents because they discovered that the SEC was launching an investigation into Enron, and they started shredding documents, there was not yet a subpoena for those documents. So you couldn't technically say that they had criminal intent, that what they were about was doing something criminal. All you could say was they were doing something. Turns out, after the fact, that it, you know, it became criminal, but they stopped shredding them once the subpoena was issued. And it was under this law that the Supreme Court was able to say, well, Arthur Andersen didn't do anything wrong. And accounting for crooked accounting firms all across America right now are going, oh. And the prosecution of Jeff Skilling's now in question. The hundreds, perhaps thousands, of Enron investors who got screwed as a result of this, they're going, oh no, what happened? You know, what's going to happen? Is their litigation going to be successful? You have the former employees of Enron who lost everything, lost their pensions. They were vigorously encouraged to invest their pensions entirely in Enron stock. They're out of luck. I mean, how bad does it have to get? How bad does it have to get? Yeah, pretty bad, apparently. When the standard was interpreted by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, it even forgave executives who said they forgot to disclose bad financial news to investors. So, you know, if you put something in your pocket in Macy's and you walk out of the store and you say, I forgot, you're not going to get very far with that. It's just, you know, it's just not going to work. Sorry, you know, it's... Try it. Just try it. Go sometime into a 7-Eleven and, you know, look around, find a candy bar that you like, and put it in your pocket and forget that it's in your pocket. Oh, I forgot it's in my pocket. And as you forget that it's in your pocket, walk out of the 7-Eleven and see what they do. I guarantee you, if you put a candy bar in your pocket in 7-Eleven and forget that it's there and walk out, they're going to arrest you. But if you're a corporate criminal and you forgot that you were committing a crime, you can now use that as defense in court. Based on this ruling by the Supreme Court, based on a law put into place by Chris Cox, the guy that they want to have be the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Are you getting this, how strange this is? Chris Cox, their nominee for the Securities and Exchange Commission, pushed through this legislation, the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All the cons are saying, oh, Enron, it was all the fault of Bill Clinton. It happened on his watch. Sorry, it was the result of Chris Cox. And they want to put him in charge of the SEC. Can you believe this insanity? And they're saying now, well, if a company just forgets, and the Supreme Court yesterday, well, Arthur Andersen didn't have criminal intent when they shredded a ton of documents. They knew a subpoena was coming, but they weren't under a legal obligation yet. Yeah, they just forgot. And under Chris Cox's law in 1995, if a corporation forgets that they're committing a crime, they can't be prosecuted. I'm telling you, walk into a 7-Eleven, put a candy bar in your pocket, forget that it's there, and try walking out of that 7-Eleven. As a human being, you don't have the protections that Chris Cox made sure corporate criminals have in America. We'll carry on with this. Tom Hartman here with you, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. Live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet, radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live365. And in 29 states and cable systems on CRN Digital. We'll be right back, 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Here they come again. Can't you
sit? Let's catch some corporate crooks. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom Hartman radio program, the place where smart people get their news. We have with us Santiago Juarez.
That's correct.
Okay. Santiago is the executive director of PACE, Community organizer, Mr. Juarez has worked with communities in north central New Mexico as an organizer and facilitator for revisioning since 1995. What is revisioning?
Revisioning is an actual C3 organization in which we do community education, basically community training of leaders in terms of trying to get their skills up, in terms of facilitating meetings, doing house meetings, and learning to talk politics.
Oh, that's great. Let me, by the way, just add, if any of our callers would like to talk with any of our guests over the next couple of hours, we're going to have some people coming through here. Our number toll-free all across the United States, 866-889-8894. Santiago, if I want to become an activist, if I want to become somebody who's out there making change happen in my local community, what do I do?
Well, I think one of the best things you can do is call us at 505-255-4266. We also have a toll-free number, which is 888-625-8888.
And is there a website?
And there's a website. It's nmpace.org, www.nmpace.org.
Okay.
One of the things that we do, and we encourage communities to do, we have a program we call Mother Jones Traveling Salvation Show.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother Jones Traveling Salvation Show is a one-day training program, and if we get 20 people together, you don't necessarily have to be a member of an organization.
Right.
You can just be a group of folks who say, I want to learn how to do this. And what we'll do is we'll come in with Mother Jones Traveling Salvation Show, and we'll train you, and well, not train you, but lead you through a process of reconnecting with the idea of talking to your neighbors, but talking intentionally about politics. A lot of times we visit over the fence, but we're not intentional in terms of talking about politics. And what we try to get our people to do is what they used to call back east the front porch.
Right. You know? Now, what you're doing this in New Mexico, right?
Yes.
Okay. We have listeners in New Mexico. We're on KRSN in Los Alamos. But we also have listeners all over the United States who probably, if they called you up, you'd say, hey, you're in West Virginia, sorry. But contact a local group. What would I learn if I came to your workshop? What would you be telling me to do?
Well, the first thing we'd be telling you to do is to start talking about politics. I mean, it's really strange.
365 days a year.
Exactly. You know, it's really strange that in this country, you know, the social prohibition is you don't talk about politics, sex, or religion.
Yeah.
If you don't talk about any of those three things, then what are you talking about?
Yeah. You're talking about last night's Seinfeld or whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, that America is entertaining itself to death, and that's typically is the conversation. It's about nothing.
Right. It's about nothing. And what we tell people to do is start talking about something. Start talking about those things that are intimate to you in your life. Start talking about politics. Go to a friend. Sit down and say, you know what? I'm worried. I'm concerned. So we first thing we do is we try to get you to connect with
And in fact, you can bring any conversation about sex, religion, family, anything back to politics, because you got politicians who want to stick their nose in your bedroom.
That's
you got the
exactly
Republicans.
Right.
You got, you know, it's all about sex and all about, you know, women's rights and human rights, really. And now discrimination, you know, gay marriage and things. You can bring it back to economic issues, the family, the war on the middle class, the war on working people that Ronald Reagan declared in 1980 and that has been, you know, ongoing ever since. Easily, any of these, religion, I mean, you know, they want to tell us how we should pray and to whom we should pray. We had a judge the other day, and I believe it was in Ohio, who ruled that two parents, a mother and father, who were both Wiccans, could no longer expose their child to their religion. And this is like, Wicca is a religion that's recognized by the U.S. Army, right? But even if it wasn't,
right,
I mean, what right does a judge have saying that, you know, your 9-year-old kid, you know, because he was in a Catholic school, he had to only be exposed to Catholicism? I mean, our state is running amok, and he's like, you know, quoting the Bush administration on this.
Right. But, I mean, so that's what we do. And then what we do is that after we get you to talking to your neighbors and your friends and folks at school, we get you to then have a house meeting. And that is invite a group of your friends over that you've already talked to talk about collectively, you know, what's going on. And to start to really think about ourselves again as a political community.
Yeah, and that is so important. It's great advice. Santiago Juarez, nmpace.org, right?
Correct.
Is the website. And in New Mexico, 505-255-4266.
Or they can go to www.pifa.org.
Thanks a lot, Santiago.
Thank you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Wanna wake up and know where I'm going.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. It is 33 minutes past the hour, 27 before, your choice. Welcome back to the program. We've been talking about citizen activism today, and this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. Bernie Sanders was talking about it in the hour before. I talk about it nearly every day, that we cannot afford to be in despair. In fact, there's no value in being in despair. There's, frankly, little value in being, you know, profoundly negative about all this. Obviously, we have to see the darkness and point it out, but to live there is a miserable thing to do. In response, instead, we have to use that negative energy that's out there, and there is so much of it, and this destruction of this country that's being done by these cons, we need to use that to produce in us the righteous indignation and the empowerment, the enthusiasm and the energy to create change. And one of the people who is really creating change in this country, not in a way that's incredibly visible, but one of the people who's a true, in my mind, a true patriot and citizen activist, Cindy Asner, is with us right now. Cindy is probably, you know, quote, famous in as much as your husband is Ed Asner, the actor, and you guys are involved in those kinds of things and those kinds of policies. But also you are very active in the activist community, Cindy.
Yes, and indeed I am.
And what advice would you have to somebody who wants to get involved?
Well, I think it's important to grab onto anything that you're interested in, and there's a million places to get involved. Everywhere you go, there's something to get involved with, and there's groups everywhere, and if there isn't one where you live, please start one immediately.
There you go.
There's no reason to sit around and be in despair. I completely agree with you. Take that energy and go out there immediately.
Yeah.
Because if everybody isn't doing their part right now, you're going to pay over and over and over again, as we are beginning to do right this
moment. As we've seen, yeah. So now here we are at this conference, and a lot of Democrats, certainly a lot of folks who call themselves progressives here, and I haven't heard the word Iraq mentioned. I've been doing this program for three days. I've had probably 40 guests come through here,
really?
Maybe 30. I don't know. They've been shovel guests, and not one person has mentioned Iraq. What's going on?
Well, I have been absolutely appalled, and I have the exact same response. I've been to almost everything. It's difficult to see everything, but I have been to the major speeches and many, many panels. Howard Dean spoke. Beautiful speech domestically, filled with everything you can possibly want to hear, and absolutely not one word about foreign policy in any, it maybe was one generic statement.
Yeah.
That was frightening. It was frightening on many levels. The silence is profound. After all, the obvious was that Howard Dean ran on Iraq. And he became the most popular candidate based on that his attitude towards Iraq. He was taken down, obviously, by the White House, who was most frightened of Howard Dean because his extreme popularity came from his.
They spent $1 million in Iowa. They came in and they spent the only Democratic candidate that the Republicans spent money to defeat was Howard Dean in the primaries in Iowa. $1 million.
I had no idea it was that much
money. Yeah, it was the Club for Growth. The Club for Growth brought $1 million into Iowa, and they ran those ads. Let's take those lotto drinking, Volvo driving liberals and send them back to Vermont. $1 million in a little tiny state of Iowa.
Well, to take out
Howard Dean.
Well, that tells you a great deal. I began to notice it on the media where there was little creeping things like he's angry and he's maybe says things he shouldn't say, and yet actually he said a great deal of things that made a great deal of sense.
Right.
It obviously made no difference whether we captured Saddam or not, because when we did, it made no difference. In fact, things got far worse.
Yeah.
So from that time on. But the point was the screen was obviously a huge misnomer, and they
blew it all out of proportion.
Oh, well,
so it seems like the Democrats are living in fear here.
Well, there's no question about it. And then the extreme disappointment with Dean not bringing up Iraq was that it tells you something even more. And that is that we all wanted him to be head of the DNC. There was no question about it, because we thought we were going to get what we wanted to get before when he was running the candidate. Now he's not even speaking about it. So who bought Dean? Or who is muzzling that?
Right.
And that tells me something that's really frightening. Then we get John Edwards, John Edwards gets up and gives one of the great domestic speeches of all time. John Edwards is not only, he's back on.
This was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
John Edwards, not, he's back in real shape and form. He's giving the great speech with all of his tone and muster. He gives a speech that which he wasn't allowed to do when he was on the Kerry trail. And then, once again, somebody from the audience yells, "What about Iraq?" He then begins to dance. Nada. Nothing. He can't answer that question. Then after that, I go over and say to him, "What about Iraq? You did not mention Iraq." And he said, "You're right." And then I said, "But you talked all through your speech about being a strong Democrat." I said, "You need to be a strong, strong Democrat."
Because, give him hell, Cindy.
I said, "Because if you're not, we will never see the inside of the White House again. Do you understand that?" And until all the Democrats in the House and the Senate get that and stop compromising, they will never see the inside of the White House, because that's the only thing the Republicans fear, that we start to speak out the truth.
Yeah.
And if we don't speak the truth, and then they don't represent us anymore. That's a fact. I believe the people out in this country are far ahead of the politicians that sit inside the Capitol. That's what I really believe, and I think it's most dangerous. And I hate the compromising that they're doing. I hate that they're not going down with the fight.
Yeah, and why do you think they're doing it? I don't get it. I mean, it seems to me that they should just look at the Republicans and say, gee, that strategy seems to work, you know, getting in people's faces, pointing out the issues, telling the truth as you see it. You know, not to say that the Republicans tell the truth. From my viewpoint, they don't, but their partisans think they are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Republican leadership obviously knows they're not telling the truth. It's yeah. the constituents have been bought. I mean, have been anesthetized, because you say it over and over again all day long on AM radio and so on and so forth. I believe that obviously the Democrats are frightened. They're living in a cocoon there, as we've all heard innumerable times. But I really don't believe they're reading the room. I don't. Look what happened to Barack Obama. Look what his votes are. What a loss. What a great loss for us. We thought at the Democratic Convention, what a wonderful speech. We thought we had a new leader. He came there and caved.
He's become a, quote, moderate, end quote. Although yesterday I mentioned that he voted for the bankruptcy bill. Somebody sent me an email correcting me, saying that he had actually voted against it. But nonetheless.
No, he voted for it.
He did?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so whoever corrected me was
wrong. Absolutely. Yeah. And on top of that, he voted for Condoleezza Rice, and he voted for the tort reform, as I call it, because essentially that vote was to deal with the tort reform and the new judge. My point is that he is running for president for 2012. What arrogance at this stage of the game, that's how he comes there and lands there. And unfortunately, his staff is advising him as such. I don't think that's how you run for president. He's running for some sort of Senate, I guess.
Right.
But it's not a healthy way to go.
Yeah.
And so I think Ann Pelosi, as much as she has been a good leader in many other ways, I'm sorry, her way of compromising is not. And Harry Reid, I'm very sorry. We could have gone down fighting.
It's time for the Democrats to stop compromising and start standing up and saying, hey, this is what we believe in. This is what we're all about. This is what we stand
for. We've lost several elections. Actually, we didn't lose the last two, but we're about to continue to do so. And unfortunately, I believe the Democrats need to be called out right now. I think we ought to make points about this.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. This is just an absolute tragedy what's going on. Cindy Asner, thanks so much for being with us.
And thank you so much.
Is there a website that you would like to direct people to for the work that you're doing, or any particular website you think is just, like, really cool?
I think...
Hang on just a second. Frank in Phoenix is on the line. He has a question for you, if you don't mind. Frank, welcome. Whoop, yeah, there we go. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Hi there. How's it going?
Great.
I just wanted to ask her about the so-called compromise that they did in the Senate. That really upset me. It's like I would rather the Dems lose on that issue but go down fighting. What's going on with these people?
I couldn't agree with you more. I wanted them to go down fighting. That would have been far more noble. And we could have felt so much better about that.
We could have had so much more power and strength in the bank when our time came with that issue, but the Democrats just folded on that. I just did not understand that.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think what they did is they sent a powerful, powerful message to the Republicans saying, you can bet on us for folding every single time. And I also think it was a big turnaround. I think we really lost tremendous amount of mileage now, and I hope we can... We really have to attack them, and I think we need to go out in the street and scream about our own party because they are not representing us. And I think when you look at the polls, which, by the way, I don't want to give them any credence because I think the way they're conducted does not really reflect actually what's happening.
Yeah.
But I believe the American people are far ahead of the people that are represented.
Although the exit polls, you know, showed that John Kerry won the election.
I actually believe the exit polls.
I do, too.
I believe the exit polls. I
say it on the air every single day.
Oh, absolutely. By the way, the guys that did the exit polls were the wonderful people that did the polls in the Ukraine. These people, we have it dead right to center that those Ohio machines were fixed.
Yeah.
So,
well, not just the machines. I mean, it was a whole systemic thing. It was huge.
From
huge
start,
program.
Start to finish.
You know, the question I had on... Thanks, Frank, for the call.
Thank
I appreciate
you very
it.
Much, Frank,
it's good,
for
good
calling.
To hear from you. The question that came to my mind yesterday, and I wrote an op-ed piece about it in Common Dreams a couple of months ago, suggesting, hey, Democrats, wake up. But I asked the vice chair of the DNC yesterday this question, and she seemed taken aback by it, I have to say. And it was... We funded, the Democratic and Republican parties funded seven guys from Serbia who did this successfully all by themselves in Serbia. Then, with our funding, they did it in Belarus unsuccessfully. They did it in Soviet Georgia successfully. And they did it in the Ukraine successfully with a specific program. They went into the Ukraine, for example. They did this the same way in all three countries. They had a different slogan, a different color, and a different spray-painted logo. But they came up with a logo. In Ukraine, it was a ticking clock. Mm-hmm. They passed out thousands of stencils, cardboard stencils with a clock on it. You could spray paint on building sides and on sidewalks.
Uh-huh.
They came up with a slogan, his time is up.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't his. It was like Karakazov's time is up or whatever the guy's name was.
Uh-huh.
They came up with a color. It was orange in the Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
And so people had scarves. They passed out scarves and hats and all kinds of stuff. They branded a people's revolution, as it were. This was all before the election in anticipation of voting fraud. And then we funded exit polls, nationwide exit polls, that identified the fraud. And we released the results of the exit polls before the official results could come out. So as soon as the official results came out, the officials were in the position of trying to defend why their results were different from the exit polls, and everybody was going, what's going on? And it became obvious to everybody that there had been fraud. If we had done that in the United States, we funded this. The Democratic and Republican parties funded this through their international groups to the tune of about $8 million in Ukraine. This is what Putin was so upset about when he was going after George Bush a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
He was saying, you're interfering in our internal matters.
Yeah.
This is what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And if we're funding this in the Ukraine, in Serbia, in Belarus, and in Soviet Georgia, why aren't we funding it here? Why aren't the Democrats right now having a conversation with John Zogby saying, John, we'll give you $5 million, or $10 million, or whatever it takes, set up a national, independent of us, you know, we'll pay for it, but we got nothing to do with it. You're an independent organization. Anybody can hire John Zogby. Set up a national exit poll, and we're willing to let the chips fall where they may. Absolutely. And just simply tell the truth to the people. Don't do this thing like Matofsky Addison did where, it looks like he's 3 points ahead. Oh, gee, the results are different. We're just going to change the results. Come on. You know, why aren't the Democrats doing that?
I think I'll take you to an entirely different way. I think the bottom line is the only way we can work in this country is to have clean money. Once we have clean money, you'll clear out. You'll get all your answers.
Yeah.
But I think the bottom line is clean money. The clean money comes... it works in Maine, it
mm-hmm.
works in Arizona, and now it's about to pass in Connecticut. I'm trying to get going in California. I am, and many wonderful people are.
Yeah.
I'm a cog in the wheel. I am saying the clean money is the bottom line. Once we have that, nobody has any allegiances to anybody else. Fear goes out the window. Strength
mm-hmm.
comes in.
Yeah. But isn't it going to be, don't you think it'll be harder to get clean money in than... let me rephrase that. Don't you think we have to get the Republicans out before we can get clean money?
No, I think actually it's going to, many Republicans are, but we've turned it around. It's very interesting what's happening with clean money.
This is the McCain phenomenon you're talking about in some way. I mean, he's supportive of clean money, is he not?
It works in Arizona very well.
Yeah.
But it's working wonderfully in Maine, and Connecticut's about to happen.
Yep.
And it was introduced in California, in Sacramento, last year. People laughed at us. It will never work. Mm-hmm. Introduced again this year, and we're introducing again next year. Clean money frees people.
Yeah.
And the Republicans, yes, they'll fight. But once you get it in happening, it frees people.
They'd like to be uncorrupted, too, I think,
exactly.
Most Republican politicians.
But you see, you have to call what our system really is. It's really, it's criminal.
It's for sale.
Sale.
Yeah.
And it is bribery. We need to start attacking and labeling what we're really doing. No more of this Mickey Mouse stuff. It is bribery.
Yeah.
And if we start calling words, what they really are, it is flat-out bribery. And it is a felony.
Yeah. Yeah,
now,
actually.
It is a felony.
Yes.
And our economics, from Bush's point of view, are Enron economics. Mm-hmm. We have to see, people have to recognize what is really going on here.
Yeah.
So I say, once you have clean money, you might have your answers.
There you go. Well, that's a great way to start. I'm very pleased I asked that question because that's a great answer. Cindy Asner, thanks so much for the work you're doing. Keep it up. You are one of my heroes. I think it's just wonderful. And give my best regards to your husband, too, who is also one of my heroes.
You flatter me.
Thanks. Ten minutes before the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
No, I ain't buying that.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, Live 365's American FM, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and in cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. We're here with Reverend Jesse Jackson. Reverend Jesse Jackson, it's such an honor to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
What do you see as the biggest issue that we or issues that we are facing today?
There are three issues that come very close. One would be Bush refuses to endorse voter rights reauthorization. They're, in fact, moving to restrict voting access. In Georgia, they only allow you to use a public government-issued ID.
Mm-hmm.
So they reduced from 18 to 5 voter access. If you go to Georgia Tech, you can use your ID to register. Go to Emory or Clark or Morehouse, you cannot. There are 65 counties that don't issue government ID, so you got to drive to the next county. So if you can't drive, or if you can't pay $2.50 for a gallon of gas, then this amounts to poll taxes. So we're going to have a major march August 6th, the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, signed by Lyndon Johnson, in Atlanta, a major march about voter rights reauthorization. The second would be a commitment to comprehensive health care and the workers' right to organize. If workers can organize, they can also get health care.
Right.
So we're going south because it's the region of the richest soil and the poorest people. Mm-hmm. If you work at a hotel in New York at the Hilton for a maid, you make $20 an hour and you get health insurance and you get retirement. That same hotel in Atlanta, Georgia, makes $7 an hour and no health insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get my point?
Yeah.
You work in Las Vegas for Harrah's. You make $40,000 to $60,000 a year as a janitor. Tuna goes in Mississippi, $20,000. So workers' right to organize is a big deal. Last, of course, the Iraq War. This war is immoral, and it is costly, and it is deadly. We were driven there on a lie. We were misled into Iraq. No weapons of mass destruction, no al-Qaeda connection. The deal there was that Wolferson and Pearl believed that Saddam should not control that much oil. They were determined to get him off the scene at the expense of 2,000 American lives and 15,000 injured, 100,000 Iraqis dead. The Iraq war is sucking up our national honor, our lives, and our money. We deserve better. And we as a progressive movement must, in fact, become much more active and visible in fighting the growth of the Iraq war. We're winning bullets and guns. We're losing hearts and minds. And hearts and minds is the ultimate victory in war.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson, thanks so much for being with us, sir.
Thank you. Keep hope alive.
There you go. Keep hope alive always. Thanks so much for being with us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Liberal democracy, that is. Real democracy. The real thing. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on radio stations all across the United States and beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. We have with us Takesha Dwan Everett. Takesha is a senior policy analyst with the Americans for Healthcare, a project of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, unfortunately, few unions I think that's actually growing right now.
Yeah, we are the fastest growing.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. We need to get you a little closer to that mic. There,
okay.
There we go. Okay, thanks. And you've been working with state and local at the state and local level to pass legislation with regard to health care costs and health care issues in general. What's driving the explosion in health care costs, Keisha?
I think it's in various different things. One, we just have a broken system, if you want to call it a system. The way we do health care, if you will, it's one of the major problems about the cost. But additionally, the fact that there are thousands of people, millions of people who don't have access to health care, therefore driving costs as well. I don't know, a lot of people don't know that when an uninsured person goes to the emergency room, we each pay for that because
yeah.
we have increased premiums. So I think there are a lot of devils in the pocket, if you will, when it comes to healthcare costs. There's not one single solitary issue to hit the head on it about the cost, but I think the major thing that we need to do is reform the way we do healthcare.
Well, you could even say that those folks who don't have health insurance and pay their bills,
right,
and pay their health insurance bills are the only ones who are actually paying the cost of health care, and that the rest of us are essentially subsidizing it, because if you have health insurance with a health insurance company, that company negotiates huge discounts with the hospitals, so you're actually paying less to the hospital than the person who doesn't have insurance who actually pays their bill with the hospital. It's a totally screwed up system. It makes
really
no sense at all.
Not at all. And then you get the fact that we are an employer-based system, but then you have a lot of these 45 million people, 80% of them work. So they're working in an institution or an employer who's not giving them health care. So again, we've got this crazy mixed up way of doing things where we're going to put it in the employer-based hands to drive the health care, but everybody's not getting it. So we really have to figure out a way to do it. And a part of it is kind of increasing access, which can drive down costs, because we know if we get the healthy and young and wealthy in there, it's really going to change the picture of who we're serving on as far as health care goes.
Yeah, absolutely. You said 80% of the 45 million people who are uninsured are working.
Yes, working class individuals who go to work every single day, wake up every morning like you and I, put the pants on the same way, and go to a job that does not offer them health care.
Right.
And then, I mean, a part of it, yeah, we understand that on the business side it's expensive, on the individual side it's expensive, and that's why we're doing a lot of work. We're in 8 states across the nation trying to work with legislators, governors, individuals within that state who say, you know, I am a healthcare voter, I care about this issue, I'm going to vote on this issue, and we're going to figure out a way to make it better.
But at the same, excuse me.
Oh, because right now we just don't think at the federal level we're going to see any change, and until
right.
that changes, we got to work in the states where we have the opportunity.
Yeah. Although at the same time, we have this very bizarre situation where while we have 45 million uninsured, people don't have access to health care, people don't have access to insurance in the United States, yet at the same time, Bill Frist's father became one of the richest men in America, according to Forbes magazine, a multi-billionaire, by buying up formerly public hospitals, making them private, and then reducing everybody's wages, squeezing the blood out of the patients, basically.
Exactly.
And you've got the pharmaceutical industry, which until Bush came in with his oil-friendly policies of the last 3 years and made the oil industry the most profitable industry in the world, the American pharmaceutical industry was the most profitable industry in the world. And so we have enormous riches being racked up on the side of the folks. And the health insurance industry, fabulously profitable, enormous riches, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars being accumulated in profits and revenue for companies in the healthcare industry and for Bill Frist's family, and 45 million people have no health insurance.
Yeah, I mean, and then you see sad stories. Like, we just worked hard in Maryland on a bill there that requires employers, the large employers in the state, to offer 8% of their health care to their employees. Then you have a situation where the governor vetoes it, standing right next to one of the powerful execs from Walmart, standing on the side of business and not on the side of Marylanders. And that's the problem we see.
And this guy, and people weren't down there with torches like at a Frankenstein's monster parade or something?
Oh.
I mean, you know, it's like, what? This guy, he...
There were protesters, and, of course, we had this whole situation again where the signs had to go down. So you're getting a point where, I mean, there are people who are standing on the side of business and at the same time hushing First Amendment rights. I mean, people were there to protest and weren't allowed to. Were told to put their signs down. I mean, and at the same time, yeah, great. People who were there saying they loved their governor had to put their signs down, too, but... We have a right. It's our democratic right to stand up for what we don't believe in. And consumers in Maryland, advocates in Maryland, and people across this world are fed up, across this nation, are fed up with these exasperating costs. It's just not right. And we have to figure out a way to change it. Definitely, and it has to be done soon. People are saying Social Security is in crisis, and it is. But much more bigger, a much bigger crisis than that is our healthcare system.
It seems to me, and you know, I'm on the outside looking in. I'm not in the healthcare industry like you are, the healthcare field. But it seems to me that the solution is a single-payer healthcare system. In the mid-80s, I lived in Germany for a year. And during that year, and I was working in the private sector, as it were, you know, I was working for an international relief agency that was based in Germany. And not through my employer, but simply by virtue of the fact that I was a resident of Germany. I mean, I'd gotten the visa and the whole bit,
right.
So I was there legally as if I, you know, but it was the same as German citizens. I got a number, and I don't even remember that I had a card. I just had a number. I knew what the number was, and for my entire family.
Right.
And I would just call up any doctor I wanted and say, I'd like to make an appointment to see Dr. So-and-so about such and such. And, you know, whether it was, you know, our daughter having an ear infection or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's the one that I remember. And you call up the doctor, you make an appointment, you show up. They ask you your number. You give them the number. They ask you, and then you fill out the form with your name and address and all that junk. But the number is how they get paid. They ask you the number. And then you see the doctor. And that's it. You never see a bill. You never see anything. And it's so much more efficient that Germany is able to deliver health care to 100% of its citizens for about a third of the cost, or between a third and a half of the cost of what we are deliver of what it costs us to have 45 million uninsured people. I mean, you know, it's like, is there a better way to do it than the way that Germany is doing it?
Well, no, where we come from, as far as Americans for Healthcare is concerned, we don't advocate one single solution because what we recognize is that we're a huge nation of people who are a little bit afraid of single payer systems, who are a little afraid of everything. People are really, quite frankly, comfortable with the fact that their employer is how they get their health care.
But that economically puts it at a disadvantage with countries like Canada. I mean, GM is moving factories to Canada because, you know, there's $2,000 worth of health care cost in every car they build.
That's true. And so, I mean, we don't advocate a single payer system. Excuse me. We don't advocate any single way of doing it. We know that there's a better way of doing it. But to that point, we're a part of a coalition called the National Coalition on Healthcare. And I don't know if a lot of people know about their coalition, but they just hired Ken Thorpe, who is a healthcare economist, world renowned. And he did four different scenarios of what we could do to reform this healthcare system to give healthcare to all. And quite honestly, not surprising, the single payer system is the most efficient way to do it. At a third of the cost, it would save over $1 trillion from what we're paying now. We pay as a nation like we have health care for everyone, when in fact we don't. And
well, in fact, we pay more.
We do pay more.
We pay more than we would have to if we had health care for everyone. Yeah, but on the other hand, Bill Frist gets to be a billionaire.
Exactly.
And the pharmaceutical companies get to have huge, fancy, luxurious world headquarters, and their CEOs fly around in private jets with gold-plated bathrooms.
Right.
And they get to live in fancy penthouse apartments in New York City and have salaries of $200-300 million a year. And the health care insurance executives get to go to Capitol Hill and pass out $100 bills to legislators.
Yep.
I mean, you know, if that's the system you want, that's what we've got.
And we've got companies that have the five of the 10 richest people own the company, and yet they're not providing their employees with adequate health care. That's the kind of situation that we really need to
recognize. talking about health. You're talking about Walmart there.
I'm talking about
the five members of the Walton family in aggregate are worth $100 billion. As Howard Dean pointed out yesterday, none of them ever worked a day in their lives.
Not a bit.
They make their living sitting on their butts by the pool, waiting for the dividend checks to arrive. And George Bush had the audacity last year to reduce their income tax rate from the normal income tax rate that everybody else pays down to a maximum of 15%.
I mean, put it in perspective. Last year, they made $9 billion in profit. For one-tenth of that $9 billion, they could provide health care for every single one of their employees at an adequate level, where these people would not be sick and unable to pay for it. So, I mean, we've got a really screwed up system, and we're really trying to work hard to change it. And, I mean, we're looking at grass tops and grassroots. We're looking for individual people who are dedicated to this. We had people following the presidential candidates all throughout the last year trying to say, make it known, health care is their priority. I am a health care voter. So we're trying to build that whole movement, because there needs to be movement at the grassroots level around this issue. And that's what we're about.
Right. So what can people do, our listeners right now, who are in agreement with you or have some sense of, you know, they're here with you on this. What can they do to help move this forward?
I tell you can visit our website at imahealthcarevoter.org, and that's
I'm a healthcare voter.
No apostrophes, nothing, just one word. And you can sign up to be a healthcare voter, and there are tools on there that help you, to give you talking points to talk to your legislators, to talk to your neighbors, to get this in the forefront of what these people you voted for, hold them accountable. And it's right there. And
that is
everything
so cool.
is on there. Again, imahealthcarevoter.org. Sign up to be a healthcare voter. If we're in your state, we'll let you know every day about the work that we're doing there. And if we're not in your state, we'll tell you how soon we're coming.
That's so great that you're doing this. We're talking with Takesha Everett, who's with the Americans for Healthcare, which is a project of the Service Employees International Union. Takesha, how did you get into this? We have about 3 minutes left. We have to be short. I'm sorry, but how did you get into this?
I've always loved policy all my life, but more importantly, I've been uninsured before in my life.
So you've been there and seen that.
Yes, I've been there, done that. I had a mother who worked every day of her life really, really hard for $21,000 a year and just couldn't afford to provide health care for the both of us. And at one point, we were receiving Medicaid when I was young, and then when she exceeded that bar just a little bit, we were off on our own to care for ourselves.
We penalize working people in America, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We have a system that's so screwed up that if you want to lift yourself out of poverty, you have to go through a never zone, a limbo, a never world, a kind of strange in-between area where you don't have access to the services that are available to the people who are truly indigent or poor, and yet you don't have enough money to have access to the services that the middle class, by and large, takes for granted or has access to.
Another
issue that needs to be addressed, that could be addressed with universal health care. We keep coming back to this.
It all comes back to it, and that's the thing. I know firsthand about it, and I'm very passionate about making real systemic change in America. I study policy. I love it. There's a lot that America is great at, and a lot we have to work on, and healthcare is one of them, as well as all of our social policies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room to improve.
Yeah, it just boggles my mind that more Americans are not furious about this. I mean, and I watched them take down Hillary and Bill Clinton around the healthcare thing in the 90s, 93, I think it was. And I just, with my mouth open, it was just incredible. Okay, your website one more time is?
imahealthcarevoter.org.
imahealthcarevoter.org.
That's correct.
Right. Okay, great. Takesha Everett, thanks so much for being with
us,
Takesha.
Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate it. Keep up the great work. Keep fighting the good fight. We need more folks like you out there on the front lines, plugging away at it and making it happen. I'm Tom Harbin. It's 10 minutes before the hour, or 20 minutes after the hour, excuse me.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your last name. Corman, thank you. To compete with you. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number 25 minutes past the hour. Real quickly, let me take a call here, Greg, before we get to the news. Ed in New York on the line. He had been patiently waiting. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just want to completely agree with what Ms. Everett had to say, because I and my fiancé are experiencing the dysfunction of the healthcare in this country. Her mother is dying at the moment from cirrhosis, my fiancé's mother, and the hell that we're being put through from the HMO and the hospital, which is continually, every day, trying to discharge this woman whose healthcare is, her, the state of her being is so bad that if she were to be discharged, she would die within like a day or two from being discharged. But yet they still insist that they want to discharge her. So and we have to fight the HMO to get them to keep her in the hospital.
Yeah, we have an absolutely broken system.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really, it truly is. Ed, I hope you turn that outrage into political action.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. Good on you, Ed. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Thanks for listening there in New York City. We have Greg Gorman with us with the Talk Radio News Service, our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service from Washington, D.C. Here we are live in the belly of the beast. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Tom. We are in the bowels of the beast.
Yes.
I've gone from belly to bowels. Do you like that?
I noticed that.
It's the third day. It's bowels. It's bowels by this point.
All right, so what's the beast up to today?
Well, we just had Jesse Jackson here on Radio Row, which is, he's always a fascinating guest and always fascinating to listen to. We also heard, I don't know, are you talking about Howard Dean's comments yet?
You know, I haven't. I mentioned it at the very beginning of the program that everybody's going ballistic about
the people are up in arms.
Yeah, Howard Dean said Republicans have never worked a day in their life.
I mean,
and if you're talking about the Walton family, it's true.
Well, you know what's funny? I think I've had a few discussions with my colleagues, and we've discussed probably what he meant versus what he said.
Right.
And I believe what the Republican Party did has done so well is they give people the American dream. They let people think that they will go from what they have, close to nothing, or even middle-class Republican, move on to then have the American dream of lots of money and lots of everything. However, those people are the people that Dean probably offended the most because they work hard. They work every day, and they have worked their entire lives.
Yeah.
That's not what Howard Dean meant. He meant there are people in the Republican Party, Sam Walton and his family and all those people, who...
Sam actually worked pretty hard.
Well, Sam,
His kids, you know.
You're absolutely right. That's right. But, you know, right. And I grew up thinking all Republicans were rich. That's what people think. And there are people that have money, absolutely. But there are Democrats that have money. That's not what he meant. But that's not what he said, and I think, like, this will be... I think the right will grab onto this, and we'll hear more about it next week.
Oh, they're going to be flogged. Somebody already called the program and said that Limbaugh has been just going,
did Rush just walk into the room? I think that's it.
Yes.
I also wanted to say, next week Congress will be back in session. They've been out of session this week. There's a hearing on Monday from the 9/11 Commission. They're going to revisit their report. It's a year later. We'll hear what they have to say. It's been a slow week. We've been here. This has been news. But, of course, next week with Congress back in, we're waiting for a few Supreme Court decisions, medical marijuana. So we'll see what happens next week as well.
Yeah, next week may be a big week.
Yeah, it absolutely could be a big week. And especially because they've been off for the break, they'll come back. There's lots going on. There'll be some grandstanding. There'll be the Howard Dean thing.
Just a little grandstanding.
Just a little bit. And, you know,
Congress? What a surprise.
Right. And, you know, as me as someone who goes to the court a lot, I'm looking forward to those decisions. But also we're watching Rehnquist because that's a day-to-day thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as that happens or when it happens, if there's...
The buzz is within the month.
Right, exactly. I was just about to say, I think within a few weeks, and what's going to happen is that's going to turn the entire... It's going to turn the debate on again from these... what's her name? Priscilla Owen.
Oh, yeah.
On the federal level... appeals level, it's going to go straight to the Supreme Court, and it's going to start.
And we're going to be back to the nuclear option.
All
we're going to be back to Bill Frist grandstanding and pandering.
As fast as you can say grandstand.
Yeah, there you go. Or abortion, for that matter.
Or anything.
Yeah, okay. Greg Gorman with the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much, Greg, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Great to have you with us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's all over the room. And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman with you. 27 minutes before the hour. on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. It will get you there, just lickety-split, just like that. And all sorts of interesting things. I'm getting all of these emails from various right-wing groups about Bill Clinton being charged with rape. This is... I'm sure this is, you know, some blowing up of some affair that he had 20 years ago or 30 years ago or whatever, that they're going to, you know, it's like when things don't go their way, they change the subject, and they always change the subject by attacking. So, but anyway, we'll keep you up to date on what's going on with that. Lots in the news today. We're broadcasting live from the tail end of the you know, it's kind of winding down right now, the Take Back America conference put on by the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, the website, the Campaign for America's Future. And one of the exhibitors here at the, go for it, Greg, one of the exhibitors here at the Take Back America conference is Bill Moyer. Without the S. We had Bill Moyer with the S. Bill Moyer's on the program a little earlier. Bill Moyer runs the Backbone Campaign. He's been on the program before. And the Backbone Campaign is all about, we caught you doing something right, which is something that's near and dear to my heart, catching people doing things right, pointing out when they do things right, acknowledging them for it. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's an honor, as usual, to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Who have you been recently finding has a backbone, Bill?
Well, we're actually try to play it both ways. We think that it's a thank and spank type of strategy.
Okay.
So I wouldn't get too carried away with it. We're only emphasizing the positive. We definitely think that we have a positive movement with a propositional movement, with the progressives have leadership. We're ready to not just run campaigns, but run the country.
You and James Dobson focus on the family. They're into spanking their kids.
Yeah. I had a board member who said, you know, hey, we're not into corporal punishment. I said, come on, the Backbone Campaign's got a sense of humor. We can deal with this. So we have a dynamic relationship, we think, with our representatives, and we're encouraging collaboration.
Your representatives? Define a representative.
Oh, Congressman Adam Smith in Washington State.
You mean
State.
Members of Congress?
Members of Congress. I feel as that the Democratic Party has told progressives we have no place else to go. They invite us into the process. They, you know, encourage us to participate in building the platform. So the Backbone Campaign has taken that participation very seriously. Mm-hmm. We organized delegates in Washington State last year around a very progressive platform, and we got very progressive language, particularly around civil liberties, in the Washington State platform.
Right.
Well, last summer, I'm sure remember when Adam Smith was...
Congressman Adam Smith.
Congressman Adam Smith.
The author's been dead for 300 years.
Exactly. We have to be careful about that. I was a political science major in philosophy, so American philosophy, I understand.
You read Wealth of Nations.
Yeah.
I found that very hard to read. But that's a whole other topic.
Other topic. Since we're talking about Congressman Adam Smith, he was actually the first recipient of a spineless citation.
Spineless?
Yeah, because he had voted for a bill against an amendment that would have taken out the most heinous part of the Patriot Act, where it allows the federal government to go into libraries and bookstores.
Yeah, it's Section 205, isn't it called? Something like that.
Yeah, there you go. You got it. So he voted against that. We had done.
He voted
against removing that,
right.
And that was clearly in violation of the platform of Washington State, of King County, and our hopes that. So we think that was an excellent opportunity to say, you know what, you invited us into create the platform. This is what the platform says around civil liberties. This is a heinous piece of legislation, and so we're going to cite you. Well, we came back, and then later on, Adam Smith was appealing to his progressive constituents with he changed his position on the bankruptcy bill.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to, you know, say thank you for that. So we have also thank you cards and spine cards that we collaborate with local groups.
You know, it's funny, when I first walked by your booth upstairs, you've been on the program before, I know who you are and what you're up to. I first walked by the booth and I thought you were offering chiropractic services because this picture of a spine. It was like, wait a minute, what's this?
It makes it even more confusing now today because there's some folks doing medical stuff right next door. So we're the transition between the medical and the political. And, you know, I actually have spinal cord injury, so I know all about that sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
So we worked with labor and other groups in Tacoma to put pressure on Adam Smith around bankruptcy, and then he came out on the right side of that. We said thank you, and now we'd like you to take a progressive position on CAFTA.
Right.
And he joined with some other centrist Democrats to do that.
Right.
So we feel like it's a dynamic relationship. They invite us in to create a platform. We need to have tools to hold them accountable to the platform, mm-hmm. and we feel like the Backbone Campaign is providing those tools to folks
right.
around the country. Yeah, we're actually working with the new coalition that just emerged around the Downing Street, After Downing
yeah.
Street.
AfterDowningStreet.org is the website.
Yeah.
AfterDowningStreet.org.
And they're doing an excellent job.
They have
job.
A backbone. Boy, they, those people are kicking butt, I'll tell you.
They are kicking butt, and they did a great job on the bankruptcy bill. They're doing a great job on this. And we've got a downloadable PDF file where people can print out their own spine cards and send them to folks. And they have, you know, urging folks to, members of Congress, to call for a motion of inquiry or a resolution of inquiry. So that's the kind of resolutions we've been doing to create accountability. Of course, we are all so very excited. We'd love to get a backbone award to one of our very favorite congresspeople. That's Congressman Conyers from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on that right now, trying to put that together yeah. with Progressive Democrats of America and other folks.
Great. Yeah. In fact, John Conyers' report, it's called What Went Wrong in Ohio, with a foreword by Gore Vidal, went live yesterday on BuzzFlash.com as Tom Hartman's Independent Thinker Book of the Month. You know, I do a book club
on
BuzzFlash.com. BuzzFlash is supported by people buying their books. And so every month I review a book for them to encourage people to buy a book and support BuzzFlash. So anyhow, that book is something I think every American should read. What John Conyers did is truly astounding. Having the courage, when the Republicans said not one single member of the House Judiciary Committee was willing to go to Ohio and look into what happened in Ohio, not one. Even when clear evidence of crimes were presented to them, not one. And John Conyers said, "Okay, you guys aren't going to go. We'll go without you." And the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee, and John Conyers, the senior ranking member, the senior Democrat on that committee, he'd be the chairman of the committee if the Democrats controlled the House. He said, okay, we're going to go. And they took, you know, the time, the trouble, the effort, the expense. They went to Ohio. They set up. They held hearings. They did inquiries. They took testimony under oath. And they found clear evidence of vote fraud in Ohio. In fact, you read the book. And it's only 130 some odd pages, you know, the summary of their findings. And I don't think it's possible to read that book and not assume that John Kerry actually won the election. And I'm just trying to figure out why John Kerry doesn't know that. You know, are you going to give a spineless award to John Kerry?
We've got spineless citations up on our website, and anybody can download them and send them to John Kerry. Or anybody else they'd like to. We'd like to collaborate with other organizations. We're not necessarily leading the way on every issue. It's not possible for us. But what we're about is providing creative tools, often with a sense of humor, in order to build the sense of movement and to, in a sense, forgive the corporate language of rebranding or creating a different metaphor for progressives than the weak-kneed liberal or the bleeding-heart liberal.
Right.
We think that strong, principled, courageous, compassionate, innovative, progressive is a much better description of the kind of movement we represent.
Great. Well done. Okay, Bill Moyer, thanks so much for being with us. And Bill, the website for your work?
It's backbonecampaign.org. We'd love people to sign up there. We do some really interesting stuff, making connections between leaders, providing tools, and we'd love people to participate.
This is your genuine grassroots movement. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Absolutely.
Keep up the great work. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming by the program here at the Take Back America Conference. Values. As a candidate, George W. Bush, this is from the Center for American Progress, George W. Bush was running around going to all these right-wing groups, and particularly the religious groups. And, you know, I was thinking this morning, by the way, let me digress for just a minute. I was thinking for this morning that referring to the religious right is probably a mistake because it implies that they're religious. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are religious who are not the right. And this implies that they're the religious folks in America. I think maybe we should call them the cultist right or something like that. I'm not, you know, there. Maybe you have a better suggestion. You know, let me know. We can come up with a phrase. Put the folks in the chat room on it. Maybe they can come up with something. That, you know, how do you describe, without calling it the religious right, the death cult right? You know, they're all in favor of capital punishment. I mean, what would you call it? I'm not sure. But in any case, George W. Bush Jr. ran around all these folks before the election saying, moral values, moral values, moral values. And his moral values include, you know, no gambling, no drinking. He's a reformed alcoholic. And so, you know, he could probably legitimately say, you know, people shouldn't be drinking. But although he didn't come out and say that, but you get the point. I mean, the implied message is there that he was trying to be a strong, you know, strong conservative. In fact, one newspaper, here's a quote, wooed religious conservatives by voting in a presidential debate about his strong anti-gambling record. He actually said that in one of the debates with John Kerry. George W. Bush referred to his own, quote, strong anti-gambling record, end quote. However, since he's become president, and other Republicans have taken tens of millions of dollars from casino interests. They're just raking it in from the casino interests. Gambling? Yeah, sure. I mean, this is Jack Abramoff, the whole thing. Jack Abramoff, you know, representing the casinos. And raking in the money for Tom DeLay. So where's the religious right about that? I mean, who knows? Now we have also just, this is kind of to wrap up the news here for the week. The Army, even though the Army has assigned more recruiters, pledged more money and lowered quality standards to the point where they're driving people around to take phony drug tests so that they can get into the Army and telling them how to cheat and you know, filling out their forms and whatnot, they've had a hard time meeting their recruiting numbers these past few months. And now the new directive from the Army gives us a little insight into how far these guys are willing to go. A new Army directive attempts to alleviate the personnel crunch by retaining soldiers who are earmarked for early discharge during their first term of enlistment because of alcohol or drug abuse, unsatisfactory performance, or being overweight, among other reasons. So now, under the new policy in the Army, if you become obese, if you don't perform satisfactorily, and you normally would be busted, you know, busted down and busted out, or if you become alcoholic or you're you know, shooting heroin or snorting cocaine, that's okay. The Army still wants you. They still want you. Go figure. Go figure. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, or from outside the United States, 503-248-0620. Tim in British Columbia on the line. British Columbia, Canada, I assume that is, Tim?
Hey,
Tim.
I've been listening to bits and pieces of your show throughout the week from this conference that you've been at, and one thing that I've noticed that I haven't heard a unified message from the Democratic Party, you know. Whereas,
first of all, let me interrupt you. This is not a Democratic Party meeting. This is a progressive meeting. This is sort of like, you know, the conservatives get together and decide how they're going to manipulate the Republican Party. This is progressives getting together and deciding how they're going to manipulate the Democratic Party.
Right. Okay, but I still, like, Howard Dean was one of your guests earlier, and
right.
Yesterday you had a spokesperson from, I think, the DNC.
From the DNC, and we also had the vice chairman.
We had
both Howard Dean, who's the chairman, and his number two person, yeah.
Right, and you had conflicting messages from both these people with regard to your idea with the election reform
and the
privatization of it.
It proves that Will Rogers was right.
Yeah, it just seems strange that we're not hearing a unified message, you know, charging the administration with, you know, theft, fraud, murder of its citizens. Whereas the Republicans seem to be very, you know, everybody is singing the same song.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to be from a different page.
Well, Will Rogers, the American humorist back in the early part of the last century, once made the comment that he said, "I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat."
Right.
And there's some truth to that. The Democratic Party has traditionally had such a broad tent that they're willing to allow, and in fact encourage, debate within the party. It's like the old joke about the Unitarians. You know, a Unitarian comes to a fork in the road, and one direction goes to heaven, and the other goes to a discussion about heaven, and the Unitarian chooses the discussion direction. You could say something like that about the Democrats, unfortunately. You know, you come to a fork in the road, one is like, you know, here's to democracy, here's to a discussion about democracy, whatever. And to their credit, they allow dissension within the party, and they don't punish, and they don't, you know, but as you point out, to their detriment, there's not unity of message.
And it seems like, Tom, that if they don't get together with a unifying message, then you guys are in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, but what they're afraid of is that if they have a unified message, that that's going to exclude people who are not on board for that message. What they don't realize is that people who even disagree with you will still vote for you if they think that you stand for something. Look at all the people who voted for George Bush who disagree with him on almost all his policy issues, yet they think this guy stands for something. They don't realize he flip-flopped far more than John Kerry ever did. But, you know, his message was, you know, standing tall, being consistent, blah-de-blah-de-blah.
Right.
And they bought it. They bought it. Yep. The Democrats need to be putting that message out in a way that's meaningful. I absolutely agree with you, Tim. From you're Canadian.
Yes.
From the Canadian point of view, we got about 20 seconds here. What do you think Canada's take is on America right now?
Well, I think we're a little bit afraid of the road that you're taking.
Yeah.
Because it's going to adversely affect us if he gets all of his I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well said, Tim. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate
thanks,
your
Tom.
Listening and thanks for taking the time to call in.
Okay,
it's the Tom Hartman program. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you.
Check your weapons at the door.
Yes.
You don't live in
check your Republicans at the door. We've had enough of them. Oh, my goodness. The Department of Homeland Security, you know, the National Counterterrorism Center, George Bush ordered, he created it last year by executive order, still hasn't come up with a leader for it, still hasn't decided who it's going to report to, yet on June 17th it's supposed to start operating. Amazing. Alex, I forgot your last name.
Walker.
Alex Walker is the executive editor
yes.
of TomPaine.com. Tom Paine, TomPaine.com.
Right.
And, in fact, Tom Paine... Really, I would say Tom Paine himself, the original Tom Paine, was the founder of liberalism, modern American liberalism. He was the first to advocate for progressive income taxes, for Social Security, for all sorts of things. What's hot on TomPaine.com right now?
What's hot right now is the fight to keep the Downing Street memo alive, I would say. That's one of the things that we're getting a lot of traffic on, is the coverage of... John Conyers' letter, or John Conyers' resolution, even though it didn't go anywhere, asking President Bush asking for an investigation into the Downing Street memo, as well as the impeachment, the campaign to look into impeachment, although not as much as the Downing Street memo. Iraq War exit strategy coverage, anything on that gets a lot of hits.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find it odd that your site, which I think is probably, you know, it's one of the better progressive sites, and it probably represents the mainstream of progressive thought. You're right there where, frankly, I think most of America is, but certainly the politically active most of America
yes.
is. And that Iraq is one of the top issues for you guys, and yet I haven't heard one single speaker at this conference, and this is not a slam on the conference, they're not setting, you must speak about this, but it's like, what's happened to the progressive movement? I haven't heard a single speaker raise the issue of Iraq. Not one.
Yeah, I do think I have heard speakers raise the issue of Iraq.
Okay.
Ariana raised it.
Good.
It's been raised in some of the plenaries. John Edwards even raised it yesterday.
He did? Because Cindy Asner sat here a few minutes ago and said he didn't, and afterwards she went up to him and asked him why not, and he just, you know, waffled or shuffled away from it.
Well, he mentioned it in an oblique way. I think he talked about multilateralism, instead of leading us into preemptive wars.
We have about 15 seconds. We've got to get the Democrats more active on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think after 9/11, the liberal foreign policy position became very weak, and liberals have been paralyzed, progressives have been paralyzed, and even though there's a lot of interest, we got to
get our backbone back.
Absolutely.
Okay, Alex Walker of TomPaine.com. Check it out, TomPaine.com. Thanks so much for being with us today.
You're
Tom Hartman here. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you next week, next Monday. Happy Friday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.